WAMBOT with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to the 118th episode of Robots. I am Jana, and this episode is all about the WAMBOT team from the University of Western Australia, UWA. But first, let's look at the latest robotics news and developments with Christine.
Thank you, Jana. Human Rights Watch, an international NGO that conducts research and advocacy on human rights, has released a report entitled Losing Humanity: The Case Against Killer Robots. In it, the organization warns of increased governmental interest in weaponized robotic systems and their use as remote killing machines. The report expresses particular concern about the potential and motivation for the development of fully autonomous robot weapons. The report calls on states to prohibit the development, production, and use of fully autonomous weapons through an international instrument, as well as national laws and policies, and to commence a review of related technologies and components. The report also calls on roboticists to establish a professional code of conduct governing the research and development of autonomous robotic weapons, especially those capable of becoming fully autonomous, in order to ensure that legal and ethical concerns about their use in armed conflict are adequately considered at all stages of technological development. In other news, toy maker Hasbro has released an updated version of its Furby robot toy. As some of you may remember, the launch of the first version of the Furby in 1998 led to three crazy years in which more than 40 million Furbies were sold. The newly launched robot toy is said to stay true to the original's core concept. You learn some of Furby's language and try to teach it some English in return. However, this time around there's an optional iOS app that can help by translating Furbish, which is Furby's native language, into English and back again. In addition, Hasbro has gone back and revamped Furby's appearance, as well as its hardware and software. For additional information on the Human Rights Watch report and the Furbies, as well as much more news, have a look at robohub.org.
The Multi-Autonomous Ground Robotics International Challenge, MAGIC for short, is a $1.6 million prize competition for autonomous mobile robots. Professor Thomas Bronnell from UWA spoke to our reporter Ron van der Klee about the first and to date only MAGIC challenge in 2010, in which the WAMBOT team from Australia made it all the way to the finals. He also talked about WAMBOT's activity since the competition and about the challenges that lie ahead.
We're here at the University of Western Australia in sunny Perth, speaking to Dr. Thompson Bourne, who heads the Robotics and Automation Lab.
My name is Thomas Bourne. I'm Professor for Computer Engineering at the University of Western Australia. I'm directing the Robotics and Automation Lab here at the university. I've done numerous robotics projects over the last 15 years here, and recently have also gone into the area of electric vehicles.
And the reason I'm here is to speak to you about the WAMBOT project, but if I could get a little bit of an idea of the original challenge that you faced a couple of years ago with the project.
Yeah, the WAMBOT project came from the initiative of the MAGIC 2010 International Robot Challenge. We've been working before that a number of years with small mobile robots. We also had some medium-sized platforms big enough to carry a laptop system. then with the Magic 2010 challenge, we had the opportunity to build a new robot team. So we chose a commercial robot base, equipped this with a number of high-quality sensor systems, an automotive PC to drive the system, and then basically looked at what is available in public domain software to get us started, and then create our own solutions around that.
Now, the original competition was in 2010?
Yeah, like the competition name, Magic 2010. So the initiative, I think, was in 2009. Then the rules were sort of specified early 2010. There was a preliminary round at each of the participants' home turf, so to speak, and then there was the final towards the end of the year in Adelaide of 2010. And the challenge itself comprised a number of different phases and involved a number of different tasks, but the main concept, the main idea, was basically having a autonomous team of mobile robots. So not just a single robot, it has to be a team or a swarm of mobile robots, and they should explore an unknown environment, then share the data. Basically, the individual smaller maps generated by each of the robots have to be shared and then put together into one continuous resulting map. They also had to identify different objects and different people, but that was mostly color-coded, so relatively simplified to a real scenario.
The result of the competition, your team came...
Yeah, we made it to the finals, which we were very happy about. We were the only Australian team in the finals. We came then equal fourth in the final. The three winners were the three US teams. They've been doing exactly that sort of research scenario a number of years before. They already had their robots when they started. We were to, you know, create the robots, build them as part of the challenge. We were always hoping that there would be a second challenge with identical or similar tasks to complete, but unfortunately it didn't happen, because the first time you go to a competition you learn so much. I think the second time you do it, you're much better prepared for it.
I see. So there hasn't been any talk of a second competition in any kind?
Yeah, there was a talk to repeat this. The organizer originally said not the following year, but maybe 2012. That didn't happen. This year there was now a new project being announced for 2013. But that's going to be completely different to the scenario we had before. It's more in the rescue and humanoid area, so something completely different to that original challenge.
The systems that you used to build your machine, you used a lot of off-the-shelf hardware to do that. So the real challenge is in the software, how you went about doing
it? Yeah, I think the real challenge is mostly in software. That's depending what your approach is. You can build your own hardware, but that's probably taking at least a year until you have everything up and running. So it's probably more economic if you don't have the resources or make this your main area of research to buy a robot base. Then equip the base with the with the sensors you want to use, and then concentrate on software, and that's a challenge in itself.
Were you using processes that you've used in other projects for this project, or you did say an automotive
PC?
Yeah.
Well, the choice of the automotive PC was mainly to have something that's ruggedized and runs on 12 volt. We have a similar PC in one of our automotive projects, so there's some synergy there. But beyond that, it's completely separate. We had some previous experience with similar bases. We had previously, for teaching purposes, we had Pioneer bases for that competition, we bought different version of the Pioneer bases, but we had some experience with them, so we knew how to interface them, we knew the software, so it made it easier for us to get started.
As far as the operating system, that used an off-the-shelf operating system or Linux or...
Yeah, the robot itself has a small operating system, a firmware that comes with the robot itself from the manufacturer. On the car PCs, we had a long discussion what to use. In the end, well, we let the team decide because the students working on the project have to be happy what they're using. So we ended up using Windows XP. For a number of reasons, it was a straightforward, simple decision. For a number of other reasons, it wasn't such a good decision, like having to battle viruses a few days before the competition, that sort of thing. At the moment, we have a new group of students working on the robots. We're re-implementing everything. We're using now ROS as a basis. So we have Linux installed on the systems and creating something that's hopefully more stable and can be used for further projects.
As far as the way you're scanning, you're mapping space, you're using laser scanning and camera, video camera?
Yeah, we have a number of sensors. So we have two laser scanners, we have a GPS, we have vision, and we have an IMU. Plus we have the robot's own sensors, basically wheel shaft encoders to get its position. We ended up just using the IMU for localization. GPS wasn't really accurate enough. Was okay getting points outdoors, but you had too much of a drift. Obviously it would not work indoors. The camera was only used for detecting objects and people. So for the mapping, we were basically just using the laser scanner and the IMU for positioning. And that worked quite well. And one of the PhD students, Robert Reed, his project is exactly in fusing multiple maps. We could use this ideally for this project because that's exactly where we need this. We have individual robots. They all have local maps, and then we have to use some statistical method to bring all these maps together because there's always inaccuracies. You have positioning error, you have rotational error. So the whole SLAM architecture, to extend this to a multi-robot SLAM.
Do you use swarming algorithms at all?
We had a little bit of an AI component, but since that competition did allow you to interfere briefly from an operator console, we didn't go much further into this. Ideally, in the final scenario, there should be some swarm intelligence, some AI, so the robots find their own positions and, you know, negotiate among themselves where each robot is going. For the actual competition, we placed markers in on the control console, so the robots were given initial points where they should be going and then further explore from there.
As far as the winners of the competition versus your team, did you get any lessons learned? Were they able to exchange data to give you an idea of what advantage they had or disadvantage?
Yeah, we exchanged some data with them. We also exchanged some students. So one of our students went to the US for a few months to exchange ideas and get some new knowledge that worked out quite well. We also got their measurement data from the robots from the competition and could use them in our own algorithms to see how that works, and that was quite useful and quite a good cooperation there.
Where is the team headed now without the competition?
Yeah, without the competition it's always difficult to sort of get the motivation going. That's I believe the one advantage having a competition, you have a deadline, you have a certain goal, so you have motivation, you have a task that you need to accomplish. It makes it easier, I think. At the moment, we have about 4 students working on this project. Before, we had much, much more. I think it was depending who you count, between maybe 15 to 20 students working on the project. So now it's a much smaller number. And without this fixed deadline, things get dragged out, so it's not so easy to accomplish things in a short time frame. But I think we're making good progress, trying to get a solid basis, not just for this particular task, but also for other robotics tasks which we want to achieve with the robot basis that we have now.
What do you see as the future as far as where robotics is actually going?
Yeah, this is always the very difficult question. I mean, you have to distinguish robotics as in stationary manipulators, which is always the success story of robotics. Every larger manufacturing company uses robot manipulators, especially in the automotive industry. With mobile robots, it's not so much a success story. So there is no real industry, there's no real application. If you don't count maybe cleaning robots and lawn mowing robots, which is maybe a small industry there. So without the big industrial application, it basically remains a research area which has lots of potential, but it really doesn't enjoy the industrial funding and the industrial development that's required to bring this to a higher level.
I looked at your website and you were looking at underwater robotics. You were talking about a pipeline tracking robot. Was that a simulation or a...
It was both. So we have built a simulation system for underwater robots. That's called SubSim. It's available for free from our website. We also made this open source now, so whoever has an interest in this one can download this. The story about this one was we were offered some funding for creating a competition similar to the US competition, AUVSI, competition for underwater vehicles, that allows, you know, Australia and the neighboring region to have a local competition, because if we have to go to the US, it's very expensive having airfares and shipping robots over there. The idea was Australia has a marine industry. It would be nice to have a competition, local competition for students doing something with autonomous underwater vehicles. So we developed that simulation system basically as an avenue for universities to compete, but not having to build real hardware. The second part of the project was to have a unified underwater platform. We built that as well. So we have 2 models of an underwater robot that could have been used as a standard AUV for that competition. And then, of course, you would have universities develop their own AUVs for that particular purpose. Unfortunately, we only got to that development stage. There was no further funding there. The person who championed this project left our sponsor. And unfortunately that didn't get picked up, so we're still without an Australasian competition in this area.
The other thing I noticed, you were talking about the not-so-grand...
Yeah, that was an interesting story as well. We partnered with a Canadian university. My friend and colleague Jackie Baltus had the original idea. He's from the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg. The idea is we would like to participate in the Grand Challenge, that autonomous car competition that happened a few years ago, but we don't have the same research funding to be able to do this. You would need basically $1 million budget to get something like this going. So the idea was we can do a very similar research just on a smaller scale. So instead of having a real Hummer car and equip this with all the sensors and having the ability to drive this autonomously, we basically built some model Hummers, so about 0.5 meter long, put a Linux PC in them, stereo cameras, some additional distance sensors, and then trying to achieve sort of similar goals, which is basically waypointing, but also object detection and obstacle avoidance, and drive this then, for example, on the cricket oval, a lot cheaper, but, you know, trying to achieve sort of similar goals as having a big budget and a real vehicle in that competition.
Did you get any takers?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, we've done this in Canada and here in Australia, but we didn't get any other universities join in. It was meant to be an open project and see whether some others would take this up. But unfortunately at this stage it was only the two universities involved.
The kind of students that you have, this is the electrical
electronics. Oh yeah, I can say something about this, yeah.
Yeah, if you can give us an idea from where you're coming from as far as.
Yeah, I mean, my personal background is computer engineering, but we have students from many different engineering areas. We have mechanical engineering students, mechatronics students, electrical engineering students, computer engineering students, and computer science students. The problem I'm seeing now in sort of recent curriculum development, especially here, is that programming is not really that much valued in engineering degrees outside of computer science and computer engineering. So we've come to the situation where especially electrical engineering students, unless they have some extracurricular activities, basically can't program. And although many have an interest in robotics, the majority of the work is always in software design. So we come to the situation where we have students who have an interest, we can't give them certain projects because they don't have the necessary background, they can't program. It's not enough time within 1 year to start learning how to program and being able to produce software at the level we require, so they basically can't do the project. And I'm going as far as to say I think they're missing out on a very valuable skill, because wherever they work in industry, I think for most of the jobs they will be doing, is expected that they're able to do a certain level of programming as well. So I think it's essential that should be done for all of the engineering disciplines.
And thank you, Dr. Bourne. I spoke to one of the final year students, Callum, who's currently working on the new WAMBOT project.
I'm Callum Micklejohn. I'm a final year student at UWA. I'm studying mechatronics engineering, and I've been working for my final year project on WAMBOTs, which are basically just a small four-wheeled robot equipped with some laser range finders. We've got five of them, and the goal is to get them to drive around an area, explore it autonomously, and create a global map. So we entered them in a competition in 2010. Uni came fourth, and that was to explore an area of 500 metres by 500 metres. The robots are equipped with a whole range of other sensors as well, GPS, another small razor range finder, tiltometer.
The competition's over,
yeah,
and so you're re-looking at the problems, different perspective.
So the competition used software which wasn't free and open source, so when that finished, a whole bunch of companies took back their software, and we were left with these robots which didn't work. So the goal is now to get these robots operating on the ROS operating system, which is a robot operating system. It contains a lot of packages and programs to help run robots, and it's a good way to set a robot up. So I've been trying to port a lot of the code from the competition onto the ROS system, as well as just getting them up and running, which I'm hoping to do pretty soon.
So this is a really enjoyable task.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun. It's fun driving robots around and actually seeing them do something.
Oh, absolutely. So you're very far away from getting to your goal. Do you have a set time to get this out? Is there a deadline?
Yeah, deadline's on 22nd of November. So I have to hand in my draft thesis. So that will be the very final deadline I'll be able to do anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping within a week I'll be able to get them actually exploring. We've already got the whole map building software working and navigation works, so we can send it a goal and it can drive to that position, avoiding obstacles, even moving obstacles such as people. Mm-hmm. And so the last part is just writing a program that selects parts in this map which look good to go and explore.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for that.
And that's all for today. As the festive season is almost upon us, it's time for us to ask you to come up with your fictional, scientific or business-oriented festive season videos and audio tracks. We had some amazing contributions over the years and really look forward to what you can come up with in 2012. As always, some of the best videos and audio tracks will be featured on our dedicated YouTube channel or in some of our upcoming episodes. To submit your contribution, just look for the call on our website at robotspodcast.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Until then, goodbye. Wambot with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.